Yesterday, Barack Obama complicated U.S.-China relations by welcoming the Dalai Lama to the White House. Now, granted, the Dalai Lama was in the map room, not the Oval Office, and that's a secret code. That means it wasn't as important a meeting as if they'd met in the Oval Office, but you have to know the code in order to interpret it properly. To explain all this sort of diplomatic code language, we have David Banks with us. David says diplomats in the West see meetings like yesterday's very differently from diplomats in the East. Good morning, David, and welcome to The Takeaway.
Good morning.
So there's this ritualistic language that's involved in diplomacy. Can you kind of give us some examples of things which maybe are not spoken, unspoken, handshakes or photo ops that mean something important on the global stage?
Yeah, there's a lot of conventions internationally that are understood by diplomats and foreign offices as sort of a tea leaf, sort of code you can read. And so things like very often you'll see there's jockeying for position or discussions over things like seating arrangements at meetings, where people stand on dioceses, podiums, who speaks first, who enters a room first. Now, these things are kind of, they're not very important to ordinary people, but these are the kind of things that you find diplomats obsessing over sometimes.
Well, David, you're actually a doctoral researcher in what's called ritual and symbolic diplomacy. Can you explain the symbolic diplomacy, the diplomacy that goes on in terms of symbols? I mean, does it matter what people wear? Does it matter how low they bow, as we saw in Japan?
The Japan example is an excellent example of this. So it does matter, is the short of it. And it matters a great deal for states' sense of a sort of prestige or honor. So in Obama's instance in Japan, what happened there was that according to diplomatic protocol at the international level, you're expected to observe the welcoming traditions of the host country. So President Obama didn't actually do anything unusual or especially strange when he bowed in front of the emperor. In fact, the only strange thing is he also shook his hand, which you're not supposed to do in Japan. So he just kind of confused the ritual rather than actually mess it up. What's interesting, though, is, of course, that that's the international language of symbols, but the domestic language of symbols in the U.S. is different. So that was construed by a great deal of great many people in the U.S. as being a sort of a submissive move on Obama's part, which at the international level wouldn't be interpreted like that at all.
So, David Banks, this is Todd Zwillick here. How you doing?
Hi, how are you?
David, so in the events of yesterday, translate for us, President Obama meets with the Dalai Lama, okay, but as Celeste said, meets with the Dalai Lama in the map room of the White House, not in the Oval Office. What does that mean in American? What does that mean in Chinese?
Right. Well, so firstly, I've got to caveat the point by saying that the meaning, symbolic meanings are never fully clear, which is part of the power that they have. It lets countries sort of state things or infer things without actually having to say them out loud. But I will give you my translation of what I would think he's trying to say. I think that by President Obama meeting the Dalai Lama in the White House, this is a symbol that American domestic audiences can understand quite clearly. It means, you know, this is an important figure for us, and the Dalai Lama has got a sort of huge symbolic association with human rights, so that domestic audiences in the U.S. can understand this quite clearly. At the international level, so for international audiences, and certainly for the Chinese administration, for the way they should read this is, yes, the Dalai Lama matters to us, but look, we're not suggesting he's the leader of Tibet, because if he was the leader of Tibet, we'd bring him into the Oval Office and not the map room. So we're bringing him into the map room because we're trying to say, yes, he matters, but maybe you shouldn't worry too much. And it should be noted that, as far as I can find out about this, the Chinese were quite concerned about exactly who would be meeting in the room, would the First Lady be there, and all this kind of stuff. And I think it speaks volumes that the Obama administration didn't allow the press to be there, that they released their own photos, because this way it means they can very much control the symbolic message they're trying to convey.
Well, did it mean something different to the Tibetans?
Unfortunately, I don't know how this is playing out at all in Tibet or in China, and I don't know enough really about how the kind of medias operate in those countries. But I think the point that I'm trying to make is that symbols, they don't actually speak for themselves, and what they really require is interpreters. And so this means that symbolic language can be interpreted different ways by different audiences, which is what happened with President Obama in Japan, and is also what I think consciously the White House were trying to do yesterday.
Well, you know, for the average person who's never going to have to worry about how low they bow to the emperor in Japan, or whether or not they host the Dalai Lama in the map room or the Oval Office, it seems to me like this kind of symbolic ritual language actually comes into play all the time for all of us. I was thinking about, like, in the Da Vinci Code, all the codes that painters used to put into their paintings, or even when you go to Thanksgiving dinner or a wedding, where you place people at a wedding table matters. I mean, manners matter.
Yeah, they do matter. I mean, they absolutely do, and that's certainly what I'm interested in terms of the research. I think the problem with symbolic language is, like I said a second ago, is it's not actually the meaning is not inherent in the symbols themselves. We associate meaning with symbols, but it's completely in our own social context. So flags have certain meanings, or historical traditions have certain meanings in the U.S. that they don't have in other countries, and vice versa. So in terms of can you use this as a guide in your life, you need to know what the conventions are first, and then especially if the other person knows that you should know the conventions and then you don't follow them, that's when I think you start to see problems. I think when people aren't expected to know, then people don't mind.
But is it okay to do in diplomacy what we do in real life, which is to talk about it and say, oh, whoops, gosh, I really didn't mean that. I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Well, is it okay to do in diplomacy what we do in real life, apologize and say, I didn't realize?
Yes, it is. It absolutely is. But not if, like I said, it's assumed that you should have known beforehand. So very often world leaders who aren't especially savvy in these codes themselves might meet and do something, okay, and that would be ignored. But if they were had met with their foreign officer, the protocol officer beforehand, and then did it, I think most other countries would assume there was a certain amount of intentional insult going
on. No forgiveness for ignorance there. David Banks, doctoral researcher on ritual and symbolic diplomacy at George Washington University.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.